Welcome to Close Up Radio, where our hosts, Doug Llewellyn and Jim Masters, bring you the amazing stories of people who answered the call to unlock their potential and taken control of their own success with authenticity, creativity, persistence, and resilience. Close Up Radio special guests share their knowledge and wisdom so you, the listener, can live the most empowered life possible. Close Up Radio. And now, here's today's host, Jim Masters.
We thank you for joining us, everybody. We're live worldwide on Close Up Radio as we continue our series with Dr. Cynthia Turner Graham, retired psychiatrist and author of For Sound Mind Enterprises, created as a vehicle for positive change and transformation for individuals and communities. And now that she has closed her psychiatric practice after 30-plus years, Dr. Turner Graham is repositioning, aligning her clinical insights and passion for helping others to create her next chapter. Though not yet worked out in detail, at the core of her ambitions is the belief in the human capacity for life-changing transformation as people access untapped personal power and agency. These self-actualized individuals can actually collectively solve the problems of families and communities, and this is the most exciting part. Through her work, Dr. Cynthia wants to share her purpose with us. She not only draws from her substantial years of training and experience, but from her warm, caring, altruistic heart and down-to-earth nature. She wholeheartedly encourages us to live intentionally with kindness, love, and grace, believing that when extended to everyone, including ourselves, we create not only inner harmony, but peace with everyone we meet. In order to stay healthy and balanced, grounded, and authentically happy, we must also truly love ourselves. And living authentically, we can more readily extend this love to others and less likely to resort to behaviors that are not necessarily the best for us and for those around us. Dr. Turner Graham finds joy in empowering people to understand that we can all live deeply satisfying lives. She says, I'm you and you are me because we are inexplicably and intrinsically connected as human beings. We are all on this journey of life together. The website is forsoundmind.com, and I'll spell that out for you. It's F-O-R-S-O-U-N-D, mind, M-I-N-D.com. Lots to talk about today. Very excited to welcome her back to Close Up Radio, the service of the Telly Award-winning Close Up Television and Radio. My name again, Jim Masters, your host, and we welcome back Dr. Cynthia Turner Graham of For Sound Mind. Dr. Turner Graham, thank you very much for joining us once again on Close Up Radio. A pleasure to have you with us today.
So thank you. It's great to be back.
You're very welcome. You know, we've been talking about COVID-19 and this series of conversations. Do you believe, from your expertise and experience, that what we've been experiencing with this pandemic has really exacerbated, may it have already been there, maybe sort of under the radar, but it's lifted the veil on the mental health crisis and made it much more prominent in our lives?
Yes, yes, I think you're absolutely right. One of the things that I think has not often been acknowledged is the degree of pain and suffering and difficulty and challenge in the life of our young people. They so often go on with their lives. They go to school every day, or they resort to using drugs or alcohol or unhealthy relational patterns. These predated the pandemic. And I believe that what has happened is the pandemic, with the isolation that was imposed, just exacerbated a lot of that sort of smoldering difficulty that was already there. And I think that that is something that the CDC actually has acknowledged, and is encouraging communities to really do what they can to reach the young people in ways that they can receive messages of health and wholeness and, you know, ways to improve the quality of their lives. So that is a concern that I have, especially, I guess, because I have 8 grandchildren, most of whom are teenagers. And so I have a special heart for that age group. But they're not the only ones suffering. I would say that adults as well, and young children, elementary age children, because of their deprivation of the usual socialization experiences that are as important a part of education as the didactic academic part. That has been a severe kind of deficit for them that's expressed in interesting ways when you talk to teachers. The children don't know how to get along. The challenge is just in relationships and working together on teams. Those kinds of things have been impacted in a way that negatively impacts their educational experience. So, you know, all of us have been impacted in some way. No one has been spared. Yeah.
Right, exactly. It's been extraordinary, and lots of lessons learned and continuing to be learned. Would you say overall the mental health crisis has gotten worse since you first started working in that area?
Well, you know, one of the things I have to say, when I first became a psychiatrist and began my training, actually, I was surprised at the level of quiet suffering that many people carried with them. Many of the patients I would see had been suffering a long time before they even came. Their reluctance to come for treatment was based on either their embarrassment or shame or stigma that mental health carries. And so I think, in addition to learning that, in speaking with people who knew I was a psychiatrist, oh, my gosh, don't go to a social event and tell someone you're a psychiatrist because, you know, you get to hear their whole life story. And then you ask them, well, have you gotten some help for these issues? These sound, you know, some of them very serious. Well, no, you know, there's all kinds of excuses for why that is not done. And so from the patients themselves, as well as from social contacts just in my life outside of work, you know, there has always been an undercurrent of suffering that people aren't willing to acknowledge or get help for. So, yes, there always has been, and it's just gotten worse.
It's incredible. It really is on so many different levels. How can we then encourage individuals to avoid the unhealthy coping skills like vaping and drinking, binge eating, drug use, things of that nature that seem to have also been semi-coping mechanisms, or at least people think they are, for dealing with the underlying issues?
Sure. Well, you know, that's a tough one, but I think one that we cannot ignore just because it's tough. One of the things that is important to acknowledge, even for mental health professionals, but this also applies just to everyone, general public, and that is the most impactful thing that you have to offer in the life of a person who is struggling is your time and attention in the development of a relationship. Change is most likely to happen in a positive direction within the context of a relationship. So just doling out advice often is not so terribly helpful. You know, they've heard it before. They've probably even said many of the same things to themselves. But when you slow down and you take the time to get to know someone, and avoiding judgment, I think that's one of the biggest impediments to the development of, you know, any kind of emotional connection or intimacy is being judgmental. So simply listening in a dispassionate way to the things that come over time, then you can build a relationship, a trusting relationship. Well, that person is able to know that whatever they bring to you is going to be treated with respect and not judged. And within that frame, then, there is the possibility for opening up the issues around, you know, self-destructive kinds of behavior, that sort of thing. But it really requires relationship, even within the mental health profession. What we know is that the most powerful tool that we have in our toolbox with our patients to affect positive change in their lives, some people may think it's medication. No, that is really not it, even though it's often necessary and an important component of health, of mental health, and returning one to a level of mental wellness. But it is the relationship that is the most important component of behavioral change, to affect behavioral change in the life of another person. It applies across the board.
It's important. It is. Why is there still a stigma surrounding mental health? And is that lessening over time?
Well, you know, I think the resistance to seeking help is slowly lessening over time. But that sense of shame about seeking help or thinking there's something wrong is still very persistent, beyond what we could imagine given the amount of suffering there is. But in terms of what we can do to decrease the stigma is actually be open about our own issues. You know, everyone has something. When I have needed help, I have gotten therapy. When I have needed medication, I have gotten medication to stabilize, you know, issues that I have in my own life. And so I think the more that people open up about what is going on with them, many celebrities have, and really encourage others. There have been athletes and actors and sports figures who really are opening up about their own struggles, which makes it easier for people to then think, well, maybe it might be okay for me to get help too. So I think the stigma is coming down some, but it is really recalcitrant. There is still much too much suffering. And then, you know, this is complicated by the fact that there are not enough mental health professionals to meet the demand. If you have had occasion to talk to anyone about, okay, I finally made up my mind, I'm going to go ahead and do this, I put it off for so long, they begin to look. Either no one is taking new patients or clients, or they don't take their insurance. I mean, there are lots of impediments to really even getting help once you know, get to the point that you're willing to seek it and receive it. So it's a multifaceted challenge we have here,
mm-hmm.
but an important one for sure.
On many levels, absolutely. I imagine it's also critical to work with children as well, as they are really experiencing lots of swift change, and they send their sponges. They soak it all up, and it helps form and shape their lives as they become adults, but some of what they've been seeing and witnessing and experiencing over the last years, I don't think any of us could have ever scripted.
Oh, no. No, we couldn't have. No one could have, you know, predicted that an infectious disease could impact a population with the medical and other research that is being done to ameliorate infectious disease no one could have imagined that this could happen in this way, that could impact the quality of life in so many areas. You know, and then there's that the matter of disproportionate impact on certain populations that were already living at the margins are already suffering for a number of economic or other kinds of reasons, health reasons. They were impacted even more than the overall population. So yes, it's something that I believe we're recovering slowly, though. I think with the increased awareness, the tools that have been provided to, say, school teachers and parents and the religious communities are doing their part as well in trying to return things to some semblance of new normal. I think that we are slowly, you know, Americans are pretty resilient. And I believe that we are mobilizing ourselves in a way that is going to allow us to heal and in some ways even be better for the experience from the things that we learn and we take to heart that we carry forward. I really do believe that.
It's very important. How can feeling a part of our community keep us healthy? Now, that's a big one because, you know, we've been separated, we've been home, we've been cautious, doing different things for our health and what needs to be done. But at the same time, how do we either reinvigorate the sense of community or, you know, because sometimes I've even heard some people say they're actually preferring staying home, preferring not getting involved with people, and that can't be too healthy.
No.
You know, we've got to have the sense of community. We've got to have the village. How can feeling a part of our community keep us actually healthy?
Well, you know, I think it really relates to the fact that we, by nature, are communal beings. We are always at our best when we are in community and in relationship with others. That's just a basic principle that, you know, we carry with us in mental health circles for sure. We know that if you want to be at your best, in fact, there's something that there's research that has shown that persons who have other kinds of health risks related to physical health problems, when they have a rich community of relationships around them, the risk presented by the medical illness is diminished substantially in terms of the suffering, the amount of medication that's needed to treat these conditions. And longevity. Relationships affect longevity. People who are isolated with the same conditions, for instance, will die sooner than those who have relationships. So it's really, really important to have relationships. In fact, there have been studies all over the world that have identified also those factors that relate to just longevity itself, not looking at the quality of life primarily, but just longevity. And in those studies, you know, it includes health and, it includes diet, exercise, but relationships is right up there with those variables that account for longevity in various pockets of the world. There have been studies to look at that. So one of the things that I think that we haven't really dealt with as a society or world, to be frank, and that is the impact of social media on the degree of isolation that we've sort of self-imposed. I have a story that I often share about a couple that was dating, a young couple, like teenagers. They were in their parents' home. They were, you know, visiting one another, sitting on a sofa together, and they were texting. They were not even talking to each other. So I believe that social media and, you know, all of the technologies, many of the technologies that have given us great benefit, also have undermined some of the just basic principles of living and life that make us healthy. And I think that technology has progressed so rapidly that we have not, as a people, been able to make appropriate adaptations in order to ameliorate the liabilities of social media and take the benefits with us more so than the liabilities. I have serious concerns about that. I really, really do. I really do. Yes.
Do
and
you,
so before the pandemic even came, the pandemic even came, that was an issue.
Absolutely. Yes. Yeah, right, exactly. You know, the pandemic really lifted the veil on so many different societal issues in so many different profound ways. One of the things, too, that is something we individually can do is practice self-care, right, in order to stay mind, body, and spirit well. Tell us about self-care.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Sure. Well, you know, I always think of that, you know, when you get on an airplane and they make the announcement before the flight lands, I mean, before the flight takes off, actually, that, you know, if the pressure in the plane changes, these masks will drop down. Be sure to put your oxygen mask on first before you help someone else.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, well, you know, that is a, that is a wonderful analogy to just life itself, that we cannot be at our best to help anyone else nor ourselves unless our care is a priority in our lives. And so there are a number of things that, that people can do that I recommend, and have recommended to my patients. There are a couple of just basic principles. One is, and I don't usually start with this, but I'm going to start with this now, and that is being able to find time to just be still and quiet and to meditate and to be aware of what is going on in your own mind and body. And that sounds almost mundane, but our lives have become such a rat race kind of, you know, activity that we don't often take the time to do that. When we get still, we usually just go to sleep because we're so exhausted. But it is important to take the time to be tuned in to what you're thinking, to what you're feeling, to what your body will tell you many, many, many things if you will take the time to listen. And so that will then lead to things like regular meditation. I'm a regular meditator every day. I take the time to be still and quiet and meditate. It can take the form for some people in their spiritual religious lives of, for prayer. That can make a big difference in the lives of individuals. Exercise, of course, is of great importance because, you know, these bodies were not created from an evolutionary standpoint to be sedentary sitting in front of a screen for, you know, 60% or 70% of the day. I mean, our bodies weren't created for that. They were created to till the land and create the crops and tend to the animals that are necessary to sustain life. That's what our bodies were made for. So exercise and moving your body is really important. And then as we were talking about, seeking out ways to relate to others that is meaningful. You know, there's ways that people can be together side by side, like I described, these two young people sitting on a sofa texting each other. I don't mean that kind of togetherness. I mean engaging in an active way, caring for and learning about, being curious about, you know, one another in friendships, in neighborhood organizations, in civic organizations, in religious organizations and bodies. I think all of those things are a part of self-care. And, of course, we cannot leave out diet. But I almost can't even start on that because the things that are within, you know, the low-hanging fruit in our world where we can access nutrients are really not very nutritional. I mean, if you think about walking into any grocery store, it's like walking through a gauntlet. There are all of these candies and fried things and unhealthy sweet things that really you have to sort of make your way through to get to the vegetables, the fresh vegetables and the things that really will sustain and improve your life. So I think we have to just be very serious and intentional about making sure what we put in our bodies are nutritious, not too full of sugar, and are not too processed. I mean, and that's a big task. It is not easy. Because of all of the distractions and the ways that we are tempted to eat otherwise.
Right. We're surrounded by all of it, and we're eating on the run with our busy lives, the 24/7 lifestyle that we seem to have here, especially in America and maybe Canada as well, maybe versus some other European countries where they take time to breathe a little bit. They go with that Mediterranean diet, which is healthier.
Oh, yeah.
I hope we get a chance to explore some more because I think the work you do is so invaluable, so impactful, and so extraordinary. And I love conversations like this because I think they're enriching and empowering and inspiring for all of us. And we only have like a minute left, but your husband, of course, creating the COVID-19 vaccine was an extraordinary thing. Maybe you can do a brief little mention on that for our audience.
Sure. Well, my husband's name is Dr. Barney Graham. He worked at NIH at the Vaccine Research Center. He's been a vaccinologist and researcher for over 40 years. And has a lot of time getting ready for this pandemic that we did not know was coming. It is interesting when you look at the sequence of events that occurred before the COVID virus showed up. They were perfect. He was perfectly positioned to decide on a structure for a new vaccine that could be combined with mRNA, and we all know the results of that. It hasn't been, well, I would say 99% is successful. There have been a few side effects, but compared to the relief of suffering and the saving of lives, it's a very small price to pay, the risk that we're involved with the vaccine. And he's involved not just with COVID, but RSV. So that vaccine is being tested and will be on the market probably within the next several years. So that has been his life's work.
I'm double vaxxed and double boosted.
Good for you.
That's it. As is the family as well and close friends. This was wonderful, Doctor. We're speaking with Dr. Cynthia Turner-Graham for Sound Mind. Extraordinary work, and you and your husband and family have really invested in ways in all of our lives that make our lives better, and we applaud that. We applaud you both for that extraordinary dedication to the greater good of society, and I encourage folks to go to the website forsoundmind.com. That's forsoundmind.com. This entire episode and the whole series of close-up radio shows, and there are thousands of them, are all archived, so you can hear them again. And we appreciate Dr. Turner-Graham for joining us. Thank you very much for joining us, Doctor. A pleasure and an honor.
Oh, you're so welcome.
I hope we get a chance to expand some more down the line. That would be a real pleasure. Keep up the extraordinary work.
Well, thank you. And thank you for this wonderful conversation today. I do hope that it reaches and helps someone.
Absolutely right.
Thank
Even if
you.
It's just one person, you're very welcome. This is part of her life's work and what she's dedicated to, and I love chatting with people like that. This is Jim Masters, your host, thanking you for your time this time. Till next time, inviting you to stay right there. I'll be back in less than 30 minutes with another incredible guest here on Close Up Radio, which is a division of the Telly Award-winning Close Up Television and Radio. For all of us here, thanks for joining us. Take care, be well, and have a terrific day.
You have been listening to a broadcast from Close Up Radio, a division of Close Up Television Incorporated. For more information about our show and to be considered for future broadcasts, please visit closeuptelevision.com. You may also learn about us on social media and listen to us on podcast and internet radio. Thank you for joining us, and we hope that you have an empowered and productive day.